everyone who is here now, I have a question to ask you. It's 6 o'clock, the waning hours of one of the longest fast days of the year. And if you look around, you'll see there's a very nice crowd and more people are coming in. So let me ask you, how is that possible that people at 6 o'clock in the afternoon, in the evening, it's not the afternoon anymore, it's the evening, I think, officially, come to listen to a shiur while you're concluding a 25-hour fast? I think I have an answer. The answer is lies in something that happened last year, almost exactly a year ago. It was exactly a year ago, give about 3 hours. And last year we were finishing Tisha B'Av. And one of the great advantages you have is when you're a rav of a shul, a wonderful shul like this, is sometimes you get very special guests. Baruch Hashem and our family, we've had a number of those. So for breakfast, Rabbi Miller, we were honored to have Rabbi Miller over. And I think it might have been for the first time Rabbi Miller was exposed to Bachrim or in Chavetz Chaim. And the seed boys from Chavetz Chaim were also at our breakfast. And it was a wonderful experience. The boys, the Bachrim, I shouldn't say boys, really took to Rabbi Miller right away. And the reason why I'm bringing it up is not only it was a beautiful thing to see, but this year for breakfast, my wife arranged that the boys, the Bachrim should eat somewhere else. They should breakfast by some other very important person in the community. And we received a protest, not because of the potential host. The potential host is a wonderful person. In fact, that host took the Bachrim for the beginning of the fast, and they enjoyed it thoroughly, if you can enjoy anything before Tisha B'Av. But it was because they wanted to be with Rabbi Miller again. They wanted to be with Rabbi Miller again. And I see a lot of people in the crowd are nodding or smiling, and I think that's the answer to my kasha. My answer to my kasha is because I think everybody here, whether you've heard Rabbi Miller in the past, heard a shiur from Rabbi Miller in the past, there's some talmidos who had Rabbi Miller in Beis Yaakov or in other places, whether it is a long exposure through being in his classroom for months or hearing a shiur once, everyone has the same reaction, and that is they want to hear him again. And that's why, first of all, since last year, since he went to Mexico City, there's been a groundswell of people who requested that we bring Rabbi Miller all the way from Mexico City on Tisha B'Av. And that's also the terrace why we have such an incredible crowd here as we finish the Tainus. And I could think of no better way, of course, and I'm sure everyone would agree, than obviously we need some way to grab hold. As I mentioned at the beginning yesterday, I mentioned in Yom Kippur that when we get to Ne'ilah, we're the last large community that's still in the Kedusha of Yom Kippur. And yesterday when we began the Tanis, I said we're the last community, major community that's starting the Zikaron of, and to focus in on what Tisha B'Av all means. And so now I could tell you every major community is done, I think, and we're just holding on to Tisha B'Av. So I could think of no better way to really try to bring everything together than Baruch Hashem to present to the Kiyuv Rabbi Miller. And of course we'd like to thank him for, imagine the tremendous Schar Alicha, again coming from Mexico City. We greatly appreciate it. And so therefore, it's without further ado, it's really an honor once again to present Rabbi Miller.
It's a privilege to come here every year, and the truth is that Rabbi Summers and I have often questioned how, you know, it makes us so happy to see each other. It's Tisha B'Av the right time to do it, but this is the venue we have. The truth is that Los Angeles is the last, as far as I know, also one of the last communities to keep every Yom Tov and Tisha B'Av included. And Mitzvah Hashem, it should be a Yom Tov of a different sort. And And it's important for us to understand that that as difficult a day as Tisha B'Av is, physically and emotionally, there's tremendous benefit to us as individuals and as Klal Yisrael by observing the day properly. I've often mentioned that the Torah regulates our emotions, and the Torah tells us when to be happy, and the Torah tells us when to be sad. But the Torah never tells us to be depressed. Sadness is supposed to be a controlled emotion, so we need to be sad at times, but not to be depressed. And Tisha B'Av is a sad day. It's a day of introspection. It's a day of appreciating where we've come to, but at the same time not losing sight of where we're headed also. In the kinos, both at night and by day, we end off with psukim of nechama, of gula. This is something we do all the time. This is something the way that the reading of the Torah is broken up. It always ends off with a davar toiv. Always ends off with something good. This is not due to any superstition. This is the way we're supposed to think. That the most difficult, trying circumstances are meant to end. Everything ends well. That's our perspective on Golas. That Golas is a necessary step, a necessary part of history, and it ends well. It's going to come to an end. One of the themes that recurs throughout the Kinos, among several, is the level of suffering at the time of the Churban, the atrocities at the time of the Churban. And in a sense, it's strange. In a sense, if we know of someone who's suffering now, a very, very important part of being Jewish is to empathize, and to be noisei ba'olam chaveri, to feel with someone else. You hear about someone else, Me'aleinu, who's sick, who's in pain. It's important for us to feel that pain, to empathize with a person who's suffering. That's part of our own growth. It's part of the way we intensify our davening, our tefillahs for a person. It's part of what unifies us. But that's all appropriate when it's someone who's suffering now. But to talk about how someone suffered so many years ago, why is it important how that person suffered? Of course, we have to remember it, be aware of it as part of our national consciousness. But why so much stress on suffering? If we talk about the mistakes that people made at that time and how we need to correct that, that's certainly appropriate. We've mentioned in other years that's really one of the main goals of learning Eicha, in reviewing the errors of that time. But what about the suffering? What about the pain? What about the atrocities that were committed at that time? What are we supposed to take out of it? I think there are two things. One of the things is, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the ultimate kindness. There's no greater chesed, no greater rachamim, no greater mercy than that of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we're meant to reflect and say, how could it be? What's going on? Hashem, who is so kind and so loving and only wants the best for his people, and that's what he did to them? He let that happen? That's, I think, what's supposed to do. In a sense, it's telling us, you realize how bad things must have been for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have brought such intense suffering on Klal Yisrael. Imagine what it took. Imagine what had to happen. What provocation there must have been for that to happen. That's one aspect, I think. It's, in a sense, it's besides learning about the actual sins that were committed, we have to say, but how bad was it? How bad was the relationship? How low had Klal Yisrael fallen? Imagine that Hashem, who loves them more than anyone else could love them brought that upon him. That, I think, is one aspect. That it's a one aspect. But I think there's another aspect also. Among all the different reasons to be upset about the Churban Beis HaMikdash, central has to be the Chilul Hashem, the desecration of Hashem's name. We've become too accustomed to a world of Golus, but there's a world, there's an ideal world, and in the ideal world, and here in this world, in the ideal world, the entire world looks up to Klal Yisrael. And Klal Yisrael represents all the values and all the virtues and everything that's desirable in the development of a person. And Chazal say that during the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, whenever any of the Bnei Yerushalayim, any of the citizens of Yerushalayim, would travel anywhere away, he would go on a trip, they'd bring a special chair for him to sit on, and they'd crowd around to hear his wisdom and to hear what he had to say. And that is the way the world is supposed to look. These are the people that follow the word of Hashem. These are the people that have access to divine wisdom. These are the people we want to be like. These are the people to emulate. These are the people to learn from. That's how the world's supposed to look. That's the normal world. We're not living in a normal world today. We're in an abnormal situation. And it's important that we remember that. The world is supposed to adore Klal Yisrael and look and say, wow, that's how we can have some access to Hashem through this people. We ourselves don't have that privilege, but through them we're going to learn. We're going to learn from them. We're going to absorb what they can give over to us. And of course, the fact that Klal Yisrael sinned was a terrible Chilul Hashem. And the fact that Klal Yisrael suffered was a terrible Chilul Hashem. And the fact that their enemies were able to perpetrate such injustice and to wreak such cruelty upon them brought out the fact that these people no longer are getting that special protection. They're not. They weakened their special relationship with Hashem, and that was all came to a tremendous Chilul Hashem. It was a role reversal. All of a sudden, other nations with other belief systems were on top, and Klal Yisrael was underneath, was persecuted. It shouldn't be that way. And all this can help us. The awareness of how bad things had gotten and of the tremendous Chilul Hashem that came out of it can help us. Because sometimes in order to fix things you have to hit bottom. And we have to realize that Klal Yisrael bottomed out at a certain point. That things got terrible. Things got to a point that it's just intolerable. We can't handle it anymore. We have to make it better. Rav Aaron Kotler, Zechan Levracha, points out that in contrast to the mitzvahs of the Torah, a person does the mitzvah that the Torah commands us and doesn't do it with so much feeling and doesn't do it with so much emotion. Does it, follows the rules, fulfills the mitzvah, has intent to fulfill the mitzvah. He's done the mitzvah. It's not great, it's not ideal. We should certainly aspire to something a lot better than that. We should try to find out what the mitzvahs mean and what we're supposed to learn from them and how we're supposed to grow from them. But at least one fulfilled the mitzvah. It was done. He says, however, that when we talk about the customs of mourning, of avelos, of the 3 weeks and the 9 days, and particularly of Tisha B'Av, these are customs instituted by Chazal, by our sages, And he says, if you do it without feeling, you've completely missed the point. These are not divine mitzvahs. These were instituted expressly for the purpose of arousing certain emotions. And if you've managed to keep the letter of the law, and you measured your stool carefully, and you asked the Rav, well, what if it wasn't meat, but it was cooked in a meat pot, and what if it was... Then you've missed the point. If you've done all that, but you don't feel anything, you just missed it. Because they only did it, wanted you to do these things so you could feel something. That's why... Yes, we didn't go to the movies. We didn't hear any music. We didn't go to weddings. Okay, no weddings. Okay. So Chazal imposed these strictures upon us. Okay, so we can't do it. Yeah, buddy, but what? So what? Why? No, during this time, we just don't do these things. They're not good enough. They're not good enough. You do Hashem's mitzvah that way, it's something. But it's not enough. So to keep all the rules and not feel anything, that's sad. That's missing the point. But if we do feel something, after a day of, I know most of you have been listening to inspiration a whole day, and I'm sure everyone feels something, and as I told myself, I'm inspired every time I come here and see people who are exhausted and who are starving and they're thirsty to listen. So I think everyone feels something. That feeling, says the Baron Cutler, is already the beginning of fixing the problem. Because the fact that Jews are upset and are pained by Chilul Hashem is already a Kiddush Hashem. That's the first step. The fact that we care about it. So few people can say they care about things that happened so long ago. And they say, yes, we care about it. Chilul Hashem bothers us. We're upset about it. We can't function normally because there's Chilul Hashem. That's the beginning. That's the first step to fixing things. I think it's general, something that we can all strengthen. I think that our sensitivity to Chilul Hashem has to be raised. I would not accuse anyone else, but I myself think that in the past, when different things happened that could be a Chilul Hashem, I think sometimes it's too smug and complacent. Well, at least it wasn't someone religious, or at least it wasn't someone, one of us. No, it doesn't matter. If the bottom line was that someone in the world, and maybe many people in the world, are going to say, that's Jews, that's Hashem's people, that has to pain us no end. And the fact that I wasn't the individual who did it, or the fact that it wasn't my peer group who did it, that's not a consolation at all. Not at all. And then sometimes it happens closer to home, and you say, well, it was far away, it wasn't here, you know. Not. We need to be concerned with the effect of every Chilul Hashem, and we need to strengthen ourselves. If someone else had a test and didn't pass that test, it's not for us to smirk and say, "Well, it didn't happen to me." No, because who knows? Chas v'shalom, if I were tested at my level, what would happen? And it all comes from a sense of mission. Who are we? Who are Klal Yisrael? What is our purpose in this world? We exist to be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, to sanctify the name of Hashem. We exist so that everything we do makes people want to come closer to Hashem, to know more about Hashem. And this is both an individual and a communal and a national mission. And whenever anything goes wrong, it has to disturb us. I mean, can you imagine if you run a business and someone else, you're only one person, big company, big corporation, and you're part of it, and you really want things to move well, and something goes wrong. There's a setback, and it wasn't your fault, it was someone else's fault. Oh, Baruch Hashem wasn't my fault, so it doesn't matter at all. No, no, you want the business to take off. It doesn't help you that it wasn't your fault. It doesn't help that it was someone else who did it. But you're not going to be turning a profit this month or this year, right? It bothers you a lot because it goes contrary to your purposes. So that's how we have to feel when there's a Chilul Hashem. And the whole Churban and all of Jewish history since the Churban has been one big Chilul Hashem. Because every time there was an Inquisition or a pogrom or a destruction of Jewish community in Europe, every single one was a tremendous Chilul Hashem. Not the behavior of the Jews necessarily. No, I'm not saying it. The fact that Jews suffered that way and that people saw that's what happens to the chosen people, that was a Chilul Hashem. Oh, and of course, there was tremendous, if these people were Niftar Kiddush Hashem. Okay, just the opposite. On the contrary, they behaved admirably. People gave their lives, went to their deaths, saying Shema Yisrael, saying Animamin. That was Kiddush Hashem in the middle of an overall miserable Chilul Hashem. They were Makadosh Shem Shemayim. They did the best they could. But the fact that communities were uprooted and mistreated and were scorned by the nations that surround us, that was a Chilul Hashem. And all of the suffering of Klal Yisrael is all fallout from the Churban. It's all continuation of the Churban. If the Churban, Beis HaMikdash, had not happened, all these Jewish tragedies would not have happened. So it's just the process that continues. But we're meant to take this. We go, as much as you can understand of Kinnis, hopefully every year you understand a little more, at the point we shouldn't need it anymore. But as you read about, and we repeat Jewish suffering, and we repeat when our minds are full of Chilul Hashem. It was terrible. This was terrible. This happened, and it hurts us. And we need to be sensitive to what we can do to change that pattern, to reverse the pattern, to get back onto Kiddush Hashem, to remind ourselves of what our purpose is. To remind ourselves that we're here for Kiddush Hashem and we can make Kiddush Hashem. And if we do our part, eventually HaKadosh Baruch Hu will work on history and that history turn to a Kiddush Hashem also. A number of years ago we discussed the fact that Medrash says that there are three different Nevi'im, three different prophets use the expression Eicha. We've read them all in the last few days, right? Parshas Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu said, Eicha Esa Levadi, how can I bear myself the burden of this nation? On Shabbos Chazon, after we said, Yeshaya said, Eicha Hisa Lezoina, how unfaithful were the Jewish people? And on Tisha B'Av, we read Megillas Eicha, Eicha Yoshua Badad, how does the populous city sit desolate? So a few years ago we mentioned that the author of Nesiras HaMishpat in his introduction to Eicha says that the word Eicha is an expression of wonder at an extreme. He says, the Medrash says a mashal to these three Nevi'im, connects these, and it says that there was a woman who was married to a nobleman, and she had three servants. One saw her in her glory, one saw her in her moment of indiscretion, and one saw her in her disgrace. And each one commented. Each one said, wow. And so he says that we are a nation of extremes. When Klal Yisrael was a young, growing nation, Moshe Rabbeinu said, wow, Eich, how could such a thing be? It's amazing. I was amazed at this, the extreme, the potential this nation has. And Yeshaya Hanavi, who saw the sad state of affairs before the Churban, said, how could anyone sin this much? And Yirmiyahu, who saw the desolation and the destruction and despair, said, how could anyone undergo such suffering? And the point is that we're a nation of extremes. This year I saw something else. This year I saw that the Tiferes Tzion says that in every situation, the Navi made a point of bettering or repairing the relationship that Klal Yisrael has with Hashem. He says that he interprets Eicha as a rhetorical question. Could this be? No. No, it can't be. He said that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to endear Klal Yisrael to Hashem, and he said, no, they're too much for me. This is such a great nation. You need more than one person to help to guide them. I can't do it myself. And that was to bring out the greatness of the Jewish people. Yeshaya HaNavi said, this bad? Could this wonderful nation be so bad? Can't be. It has to be the result of an outside influence. This is not who they are. Can't be. Simply impossible. The by nature of the severity of the Averis tells us this is not Klal Yisrael. No. That was the Eicha he said. And Yirmiyahu HaNavi said, to the point where they suffered so much? No. This can't go on like this. This is not the relationship we have with Klal Yisrael. It can't be. So each time was a, how could this be, with a no answer. So this is what one of the things we have to learn from Tisha B'Av. We have to step back and take a hard look at ourselves and a hard look at Klal Yisrael and say, this is not where we're meant to be. This is not us. We've done silly things, but it's not who we are. We've been influenced by society around us. We've absorbed too readily some of their values, some of their goals. No, this is not us. This is not. We're a people of Kiddush Hashem. We're a people who cleaves to Hashem. We're a people who only wants to absorb Hashem's values and Hashem's messages. And that's who we are. And we're going to live by those principles. And we're going to show the world. And then, of course, that little nagging voice says, come on, you don't really think you're going to change the whole world, do you? And you don't really think you're going to even change Los Angeles, Jewish community. Do you think you're going to change it? Come on. Who are you kidding? Let's just go with the flow. Let's continue on. And I think it's important always to remember how the Chafetz Chaim described his own life experience. He said that when he was a young man, he realized that he was gifted, that he had speaking abilities, and that he had writing abilities, and he realized that he had a mission. And he decided that he was going to change the world. And he tried, but he saw that it's just too much to do. He couldn't reach everybody, and he couldn't. So he decided that he would change the Jewish community of Poland, because Poland was a strong Jewish community and they would certainly be receptive to everything he wanted to teach them. And that became his revised goal, to change Yiddishkeit in Poland. He said he couldn't, it was too much for him. He said it's this faction, another group, but couldn't do it. So he said, okay, but Radin, he's not the Rav of Radin, he was the spiritual leader of Radin, though. In Radin, everyone knows, in Radin, I'm going to change Radin. Couldn't change Radin. And Radin, wasn't much bigger than this block. So he said, but in my home, that's my castle. I'm going to change my family. My family members are going to change. It's too much. And he said, so finally, I decided to settle. for changing myself. That's what Chafetz Chaim said, and he was satisfied with that. I'll change myself, and that'll be my accomplishment. After the Chafetz Chaim passed away, someone told this over and pointed out what's really obvious, that of course in the end he changed the world. So by not focusing on changing the world, by focusing on changing the Olam HaKotan, on his own changing his own world, eventually he did change the world. He did affect everyone. And all over the world there are people who are learning Shmiras HaLoshen and who are trying. I must tell you, in Mexico City there's a community of Bnei Noach. These are non-Jews who have no intention of becoming Yidden, but they want to live according to the Torah's rules for them, and they work on character, and they learn Shmiras HaLoshen too. That's how far it reached. But just remember what Kiddush Hashem is. We have to remember, we're the leaders. We have to be leading in that example. And so this is the way we take whatever we learn today. We're going to say, I don't have to change everyone. I don't have to change the whole world. I don't have to change LA. I don't have to change everyone in the shul. I have to change me. And that will be an accomplishment. And the effects will certainly be more than we anticipated. Because when you change, you provoke change. You affect change in others. You stimulate, you inspire change. Even though you can't change anyone else. As the end of the period of Avelis draws near, we have to look at, there's certain positive aspects of Golus also. It's important to know that Golus is a purposeful stage in the history of Klal Yisrael. It's not a waste. And one of the keynotes brings this out. It's very bittersweet. But one of the keynotes talks about, it's based on a medrash, that instead of fulfilling the psukim, the verses of blessing, of bracha, of Hashem, we've chosen, because of our behavior, to fulfill the verses of foreboding, of suffering, in the Teichacha. And it's a medrash. It's based on a medrash. The medrash on Eicha that says that when Hashem rebukes Klal Yisrael, says, "If you had listened, you would be fulfilling this pasuk that starts with an aleph. Instead, you're doing this pasuk that starts with an aleph." And it goes through the aleph phase, saying that for every pasuk, for every letter, there's a pasuk of bracha, of blessing, and there's a pasuk that does just the opposite. And we're living out one scenario instead of the other. But one way or another, Hashem's will is going to get done. So we didn't take the easy road. So we're going to go through the hard road. But Golus is a purposeful existence. Now, given that mistakes were made, this is the way to go. And, of course, Klal Yisrael has been tested in Golus, and by and large, Klal Yisrael has performed very admirably in Golus. It happened once during the Second World War. The Blujeva Rebbe, Zecharon Livracha, was in a concentration camp. He was not the only Hasidic Rebbe there. There were other Rebbes there also. And as Hanukkah approached, they began to make preparations. You know, among Hasidim, the Rebbe lighting the Hanukkah menorah is an event. Everyone comes to watch how he lights the Hanukkah menorah. And so the preparations they made, you know, it wasn't like Baruch Hashem, we get it polished, that menorah, until it shines. What they did was, you know, they hollowed out a potato, so they would have something to put in, and they saved their margarine rations. They could put in enough margarine, melted margarine, to light the menorah. And they plucked some threads from their threadbare uniforms to be able to make a wick. That was how they prepared for Hanukkah. And the Blujva Rebbe was honored with the lighting of the menorah. He approached the menorah, first night of Hanukkah. He said the first bracha. He said the second bracha. He hesitated. He stopped. He turned around to look. And then he said the third bracha, the Shechianu, and he lit the menorah. And they asked him afterwards, what was the hesitation, what changed? And he said, the truth was, I said the first bracha with no problem. Hashem commanded us to light the menorah, light Ner Chanukah. And the second bracha, about how Hashem performed miracles for us, I had no problem with that. And then I had a hesitation, I had a doubt in my mind. You know, there's some, in Bein HaMetzarim, we try not to say Shechianu. And I was questioning whether it's appropriate to say Shechianu given the situation we're living in. Can you say Shechianu on an existence in a concentration camp? I knew I wasn't the only Rav or Rebbe here, so I wanted to see who else was there. I wanted to ask someone what to do. But when I turned around, and I saw hundreds of people watching and waiting for Ner Chanukah, that resolved my doubt that I knew you could say Shechianu. Because if that's how Klal Yisrael reacts, that in the middle of the suffering, they're all waiting for Ner Chanukah, well, that's good enough for Shechianu for me. That shows the silver lining to the dark cloud in which we're living. And Klal Yisrael throughout history has proven itself. It was during the First World War that one of the great rabbis was traveling. I don't remember who it was, but he was traveling. He was in what we call Hungary now, and he was staying in a certain shul for Shabbos. He had a room where he and his entourage stayed, where they had their suddas. Friday night, they heard a sound of soft singing coming from the Beis Medrash. The soft singing of someone learning Torah. And it went on. The rabbi had a late tish, and this singing goes on, this learning, sweet learning going on in the Beis Medrash late. So the rabbi sent someone to see who it was. Came back, he was shocked, he said, there's an Austrian soldier with his gun. And he's sitting there, his gun is propped on the table, and he's sitting and learning Gemara. Kind of find out who this is. Austrian soldier, well, it makes sense. So he went and he found out that this was a Jew who had been conscripted into the Austrian army. He couldn't, so he said he made up though that he has time off on Friday nights, and on Shabbos, that's his day off. He's not going to waste it. And he learns a whole night, Friday night, so as not to waste a moment that he has off on Shabbos. So the Rebbe commented with, of course, a certain tongue-in-cheek. He said that, you see, these are the people who are keeping Mashiach, don't let Mashiach come. Well, of course, are people like this. Can you imagine what Nachas Hashem has from a child who doesn't sleep when he has the chance to rest and sits and learns for a night in spite of the environment? When Mashiach comes, where can Hashem get such nachas? Where can Hashem derive such pleasure from a Jew? He said, so of course Hashem keeps the gal, he keeps the gal slept longer. He wants to have people like this. Of course, as I say, it wasn't his statement on this person. Of course, but that you have to understand, the importance of what he was saying is that Golas is purposeful because it brings out some of the greatness of the Jewish people. You know how Daf Yomi has become such a popular thing? Daf Yomi, people who had little or no connection to learning joined the movement. And Daf Yomi, it's a wonderful thing. Wherever you go, there's Daf Yomi. My wife's great uncles used to say a Daf Yomi shir. He said a Daf Yomi in the concentration camp, and he said it from memory because they didn't have a Gemara. But every evening they would get together and he would say a Daf. He would say a Gemara. And of course, the most striking thing is you say, well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good memory. That's pretty big Talmud Chacham. You know something? I don't know that we have the ability to emulate that kind of memory. But I say, look, I want to learn from the Yidden who came to that shir after a day of slave labor on starvation rations. I want to learn from them. I want to say, that we can emulate. When things are tough, sometimes that brings out the best in us. So Golus has been a testing ground for Klal Yisrael. Golus has brought out the best in us. Just like in Mitzrayim, where this week's parasha says that it was a Kur HaBarzel, it was an iron crucible. A crucible is not where you destroy metal, a crucible is where you refine metal. And so Klal Yisrael was refined through that Golus, and Klal Yisrael is refined through every Golus. It brings out strengths that perhaps we ourselves didn't know we had. And so, in a sense, you could compare the Golus, the lengthy Golus. The Gemara in Shabbos describes the process by which they would extract the blood of the chilazon. The chilazon was a creature of some kind, it was a fish or a mollusk of some kind, but the chilazon was which they would take the blood of the chilazon to make the dye that was used for what's called techeles, a rich blue, a blue color dye that was used for the garments of the Kohen Gadol, possibly the Kohen Hedit, and that was used in the making of tzitzis when we had it. And the Gemara describes the process, and the Gemara describes what when one squeezes the blood out of the chilazon, is one doing what's called netilas neshama? Are you deliberately killing something? It says no. There's a paradox here. Gemara says on the one hand he has to get the blood out because that's the only way to make the dye. On the other hand, as soon as this creature dies, the quality of the blood goes down. And so Gemara says, so he's trying to get the blood, but he doesn't really want it to die. He's trying to keep it alive, but take the blood out. And so he doesn't have any benefit in this creature dying because it's better while it's alive. And I think that's where the situation of Golus that we have is that we have to do everything to get out of Golus. But while Golus is here, you have to take advantage of the unique situations that Golus offers. Because the tests we have to pass here and now, we're not going to have to pass after Mashiach comes. Part of the difficulty of Golus is what we call Hester Panim. Hester Panim literally is hiding the face. Hashem doesn't show his face to us. I once heard it described as Hashem is called Meitzitz Min Acharakim. Hashem peers from through the cracks. Meaning that a father never stops loving his children, never stops caring for his children, never stops worrying about his children, and always, mothers for sure, huh? and always being on top of things to try and make sure everything goes best for the children. So, when the children behave well, they get to go out and play, and the parents open up the curtains and they watch their children and they look out and they make sure they're on top of things, make sure nothing dangerous is going to happen. As much as they can, they protect their children. And of course, as the children run by the window, they can wave too and they can wave back. That is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does with us when we behave well too. But what happens when the children misbehave? Out! Outside! You spend some time in the yard now. Play in the yard. You can't be here now. Play in the yard. Now they don't open the curtains. Now they just open it a little bit. Because they want to make sure nothing bad happens. But they won't give their children the pleasure of seeing their smile. That's Hester Ponim. Hashem says, I'm still watching you. I'm watching you in Golas also. I'm going to make sure that it doesn't happen. There's an expression in Spanish that says that Hashem squeezes, but he doesn't strangle. He'll take you as far as you can go, but not going to kill you. You know, not going to destroy Kal Yisrael. He's going to push you pretty hard. But you just don't see it. And it's this seeing Hashem, or being aware of Hashem, that's very, very important for us. It's going to help us get through the final stages of Golas and get to the time of Mashiach. I heard a mashal, it struck me and I adapted it a little bit. Baby cries in the middle of the night. Baby's hungry. Does the baby clear his throat? I'm hungry. No, he screams. And he screams hysterically. So mom gets up to go make a bottle. What is the... Okay, mommy's going to make a bottle. What is the baby? Baby screams hysterically. And she's in the kitchen. She's rushing in. And he's screaming the whole time. When does this change? As soon as she walks into the room with the bottle, and he sees her. But the hysterical screaming stopped. Now it's just, please, please give it to me. What was the difference? Why, again, he hasn't gotten the bottle yet. He's still hungry and thirsty. But at least he sees that his mother is coming. A minute before, she was also in the process of getting that bottle to him. But he didn't see it. Even though she told him, yeah, I'm going to get it. But it didn't mean anything to him. So his desire has not decreased. But he's not panicking anymore. He realizes that help is on the way. So what we need to do is not be babies. What we need to do is say, I do know that as difficult as things are, Hashem is preparing the bottle. Hashem is in the process. To us it looks all bleak, but it's not all bleak. This is the way it has to be. This is getting us there. And we have to do our best now. Now, of course, we're not going to stop begging Hashem, but we're not going to be desperate. We're not going to be hysterical. We're not going to be broken. We're going to be at the stage of, please Hashem, please give it to us. We know it has to come from you. So this is the strength of Klal Yisrael. This is the strength. This is why people were able to walk to gas chambers saying Ani Mamin. They said, yes, I'm not going to make it. But my neshama lives on forever, and my nation lives on forever. And that, in the end, that was the main thing. So it's a question of remembering that when we talk about the darkness of Golas, there's light. The best part of Klal Yisrael came out. People helped each other in a way that they never helped each other before. And in moments of stress since the destruction of Europe, you see how it happens when Leilenu there's an illness in the community, how people are motivated, people help, and when someone has a problem, people are there to help. We just shouldn't wait for a problem. We should try and work on this. It's Hashem, you know, we can do without that. We're gonna aspire to these midos, to these character traits, these qualities, these virtues, even without suffering. We're not going to wait for a Gulf War. Remember the Gulf War? You know, everyone thought, did you hear anything? Did you hear what's doing? You didn't even check to see what color person's yarmulke was, or whether he had one. It didn't matter. you just, and it's, again, it's so sad that we need these things to unify us. We have to do it all the time. But to remember that Hashem is on top of things, that Hashem is moving things, and to remember that we have a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we have that connection, that we are, that we, that Hashem is paying attention to what we do, and the Torah we learn is what connects us to Klal Yisrael, connects us as Klal Yisrael to Hashem. You know that Chazal say on the pasuk Al Ma'av Da'aretz, why was Eretz Yisrael destroyed? It says that this question was asked to the Chachamim, to the wise elders of Klal Yisrael, and to the Nevi'im, to the prophets, and to the Malachim, to the angels, and no one was able to answer this until HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Al-Ozvam Esterasi, they abandoned my Torah. A very well known commentary of Rabbeinu Yonah, the Ran Nedarim, quotes that, well, I mean, if they abandoned, if they stopped learning, why didn't everyone else know that answer? If people stopped learning, everyone could have seen that. There's no. And so the Gemara says, Al Shlaberchu Batera Tchila. They didn't say Berkas, they didn't say the Bracha on the Torah. And Rabbi Yonah says that Torah wasn't important enough to them to make a way with it. They did it, they learned, but they didn't see it was so important to say a Bracha on it. So Baron Kotler points out that of course they learned Torah, but they didn't appreciate the importance of their Torah. And he said, that's something we have to work on also. We need to remember that we have a connection to Hashem through our Torah. You're not just learning something very smart. You're talking to Hashem. You're learning from Hashem. You're bringing it from Hashem. As he says, he says, if you appreciate the importance of your learning, and this is not only men who are obligated to learn. Everyone says Berakas HaTorah. Even the Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch, who told the women don't say Berakas HaMitzvahs, they don't do, but everyone says, he said, they also say Berakas HaTorah, because we all have a connection to Hashem through learning. And he says, so Rabban Kotler says, he says, if we would appreciate that connection, now we're not talking about diligence, that's something else, we're talking about just appreciating the importance of the Torah we learn. That, he says, is the first step in strengthening our relationship with Hashem, which will make us sensitive to Chilul Hashem, and that's the beginning of fixing the problem. And I think that we need to have this appreciation. In Mishlei it says that a person who turns his ear away from learning Torah, Meisa Ozne Mishma Torah, after philosophy to Eva. If a person turns his ear away from learning Torah, his davening is abominable to Hashem. And I say to myself, why? Because he doesn't do one mitzvah, he can't do another mitzvah. Okay, so the law, he don't do all the mitzvahs. So why, if he didn't do one, why is he excluded from another mitzvah? But if you appreciate what Torah is and what tefillah is, then you realize that it makes a lot of sense. You come to a new neighborhood. You have no friends. And someone comes and says, I'd like to be your friend. I see you're new here. We can be friends. I want to explain to you the terms of our friendship. I talk and you listen. You don't get to talk. I don't listen to you. You know, thanks, but no thanks. That's not a healthy relationship. That's not a friendship. That can't be. It has to be two-way street. It has to be. So remember, davening is we talk to Hashem. We don't just read words that someone wrote. We actually talk to Hashem. And learning Torah is when Hashem talks to us. That's how Hashem communicates with us, through the Torah that we learn. So if you don't want to listen, you can't expect to talk. We can't have a relationship like that. you close your ear, you don't want to listen to words of Torah? Oh, so that's the, well, then you can't be friends. Then you can't, you can't, of course you could do mitzvahs, but you can't expect to have meaningful conversation if you're going to do the talking and not the listening. Can't be. And it's important to appreciate that when we learn Torah, you're not just sitting there to learn something great. You're strengthening your connection. You're listening to Hashem speak to you. It's not with thunder and lightning, and it's not with direct prophecy. But that's how Hashem talks to us. That's where He sends us the messages. And we need to know, as it says in the pasuk in the beginning of Eicha. It says Eicha. Says Yerushalayim was like a widow. It says, "Come, like not completely like a widow." And one of the opinions in the Medrash is that says, "Yeah, widowed from the 10 tribes that were exiled, and widowed from the last 2 tribes that were exiled, but never widowed from Hashem. The Shekhinah is always with us." Hashem's presence is always accompanies us in the worst times. And that's why we're able, at the worst times, in the darkest galus, to say it's all part of the process, the bottle's being prepared, and in the galus lie the seeds of redemption. In Slichas, there's a line that says, from the tzara, from the problem, you Hashem are going to fashion the redemption and the relief. And the Ruzer Rav Zecharin Lavracha said that when we talk about the darkest moment of Golus, we say Avodim Hoyinu. Avodim, that describes the whole situation, Avodim. But he says, but you know what Avodim also, Avodim is slaves, but you know what Avodim also does? The letters of the word Avodim are the initial letters of David ben Yishai Avdecha Mashichecha. That in the slavery are the seeds of redemption. And that's the light in the darkness. May Rabbeinu Hashem should help us that we should survive well the last stages of Golas, and we should merit the coming of Mashiach, and we should appreciate the light that's not light in the darkness, but light that's completely light.
In terms of speaking, I want to thank Rabbi Miller for bringing us from the darkness into the light. Mirat Hashem, his word should stay with us and help us, guide us. So Mirat Hashem, we are Zocha that Mirat Hashem next year, as I told all the speakers, we'll be back together in Mirat Hashem with all of our wonderful speakers that we've had today. But the spin will be a little different, as we say in America. And it'll be hopefully a sasun simcha in Mirat Hashem for the ultimate necham. And Mirat Hashem will all be Zocha to share that together. Before we daven mincha again, I'd really like to take this opportunity to thank everyone, the beautiful crowds that we've had throughout the shurim. I don't know who's been here through everything I have, but I don't know what everybody's been through, but the crowds and the reactions and the participation has been really overwhelming, and we really appreciate it, and that's a tremendous chos of Mitzvah Hashem for each and every one of you, and should have much nachas and yeshuas and nachamos. Yashkoach, everyone.